It's not recording. Now it is. Okay. Now that we've put on tape number two, Mr. Ross, I want to hear what that unusual thing you saw going through the pass one foggy morning.
Well, we was going out and we got about 5 or 6 miles and went out to pass here at St. George Island. That went out box ice cut. And looked back behind you could see the island, but up ahead of us, it showed that island on ahead of us up there. Some way or other, the reflection of the fog and the atmosphere and all, that island was up ahead of us, and us going on toward Mexico. You see the cut and see that the timber and the cut and right in the fog, the fog bank. When you go off out there, you'll see that fog bank raise up and it'd be as high as trees, you know, fog bank. But that was funny to me. I looked at my compass and I said, the compass is wrong. We going back to the island? And then I looked at the sun. The sun was in the southwest there. No, it's just a mirage, I reckon they call it.
Never saw it again.
Uh-uh.
Did everybody see it on the boat or just you?
Oh, yeah. Anybody who's been there, they could have all saw that. Cause it, just the way the reflection of the thing. Running along out there in the fog, I seen a pelican show up there in my head sitting in one, and you look at him, after you seen him, he's as big as this house. Some way or the reflection does that or something.
Mm-hmm. What's the most unusual thing that ever showed up in your net?
In what?
In your trawling net when you were shrimping.
Oh, my goodness. I saw a fella one day, he was outside of me, caught a nigger woman's head like that, and he wasn't caught her head. So he was an old man, he was an old squarehead, what we call squarehead, Norwegian. He was trying to curl the shrimp, and the boy was, the fella with him was 35, 40 years old, and old man Pete raised that. Was picking shrimp, and he went and picked that nigger woman's head up by like that in the head and sat up on the hat and turned her face to that Sarvis fellow, Lee Sarvis, and said, "Here, look here, Lee. Somebody killed her here and cut her all up and put her in a, they found some of her limbs in a bag. But the head, I reckon it drifted out or something. He caught that in his shrimp net. That's about the most unusual thing I ever heard of. We catch all kind of fish. As much as I have fish, every once in a while I see a little fish that I've never seen before. It's a little different, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you save the fish and try to find out what it's called?
We never did. We didn't have time. Didn't worry about it because they said, well, somebody else knows what it is.
Yeah.
I caught two or three snook that they catch in South Florida. Caught two or three of them up here one time. It happened to be a warm summertime weather, and I reckon they migrated up. Might have been a storm run them off. I don't know. Now down around Key West, Fort Myers, there's a lot of them. You see them laying around a pile underneath where the boats are tied up. And them old timers would come down there and come 2 o'clock at night, they'll slip down there on the dock trying to catch one of them snook trying to outfigure them.
They do a special blessing of the boats over here, I've heard.
They do now, yeah.
The shrimp boats?
Yeah, well, all of them. I make the mullet boats and the oyster boats, and some of them bring their boat down there all doing it. Well, whenever they have, I reckon it's in the seafood festival, I don't know. I reckon it's the same time they have them. They'll be gang them up, you know, down there. Work 2 or 3 days putting a bunch of bunting and stuff all over the rigging and all, you know. And
do you ever have your boat blessed?
No.
When did they start doing that?
When did they start doing that? Mm-hmm. They done that for the last 200-300 years up around on the New England coast, I think.
But not in this area.
Well, down at Cedar Keys, they done that, where they got a sponge, to catch sponge in Cedar Keys. I reckon that business is completely just out and gone off the face of the earth now.
The Cedar Keys sponging?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Well, they did it here, too, for a while, didn't they, in Apalachicola?
No, there wasn't no sponges around here. The boats, they never had a sponge boat out here. Now, sometimes weather be bad, and there'd be a crew of them maybe want to see some friends up here in the weather bad, so they just come on in here, which was only a 20 or 30-mile run, a 40-mile from where they come, you know. They stayed out 3 or 4 months, them sponge boats did, and I reckon they got tired looking.
When you'd go out for 12, whatever amount of time that you were going out to fish, what kind of supplies did you take along to eat? Groceries, you recall?
Well, we carried mostly like your eggs and your rice and your grits and your beans and your flour. And most of the time we always had bought bread, you know. And there's two men on a boat, as much stuff as we was working, you didn't have the time to cook like it out to. And then we'd carry maybe one mess of meat or, you know, make a roast or some steak or something. But there was a lot of fish yet. There was fish here generally every night for supper. You ate fish for supper.
Did you fry them? How'd you?
Most of the time.
Never got tired of fish.
Now, when you work from in the summertime from 5 o'clock in the morning till 9, 10 o'clock at night, you don't get tired of nothing when you're working hard like that. Them people worked hard. We got a lot of punishment. No pilot housing on them boats at all. They wouldn't have had a pilot house. They wouldn't have went out to pass on a boat that had a pilot house on it. Not them old timers, because they know they get caught in that bad weather. They go and stay, and if they going to stay 12 days, they stay 12 days. Mm-hmm. Unless, like I say, a hurricane. They get some suspicion of a hurricane, then they'll ease back in. They know them pilot houses will wash off the deck. All that will wash off of these boats. These things that they're fishing out of here now, of course, they got all kind of radios and everything, and give them a little warning. But they had all got drowned when I was fishing. And they drowned them now. They drowned them. They lost 2 or 3 last winter out there off Panama. It's a hard life. But you enjoy it. You got your own boss, man. But you're talking about a woman on the boat. I believe that the women that was on the boat was always, maybe the captain would take his wife or something, the crew would quit a lot of times. Simply because they had been on a boat, and the woman, she probably wouldn't have anything to do about it, but the men would start arguing over who was going to get her or something, you know. And there was a lot of killings on them boats about that stuff in time gone by. And I believe that's where the tradition of no woman aboard the boat.
But that didn't hold true in Apalachicola, because I found...
Well, there's just one man. Mm-hmm. One man and a woman going on. I seen a white man, a white woman, and a nigger man, and a nigger woman on the boat. But somebody said there was a piece in one, or a piece somewhere said that we'll have peace in time. I said, no, as long as there's 2 men and 1 woman, there'll never be peace, or 2 women and 1 man.
He's probably spoke a mouthful. Were there any, when accidents are like, somebody was stung by a jellyfish, were there any type of medicinal practices that you knew that was good for it, like a chew of tobacco or something like that?
No, we just put up with it.
You just put up with it? Mm-hmm.
one of the boys grew up around here 8 or 10 years ago. He was out there one day and he started hollering on the radio. He got stingery stung. Boy, he was hurting by himself. And I told him to take that can of kerosene. I knowed the boat and I knowed how it was. And I take that can of kerosene, put 2 or 3 cups of it in the pot and set it on the stove and turn the light the burner and stick that moon down in that thing till it stay there as long as it could, you know. And that hot kerosene that got that poison out. Boy, he was suffering. it stopped it.
So you used kerosene a lot for taking...
Well, that's all you had. Mm-hmm. But you take that warm kerosene and, of course, crude oil would be the same thing. Like on them diesel boats, you know, they all got crude oil on diesel motors. And you put enough to cover your hand where it's stuck and set it on the stove and let it be warming and turn warm slow and hold that in. And as it gets hot, it'll draw a finished oil and most of that pouring out. One day on the boat that I picked up, must have had 1,500 pound of lift and 3 or 4 tubs of shrimp in it, 1,500 pound of catfish and junk. I was in a hurry and I put both of my nets over, a big net and a little troll, and started to work. Rammed the catfish all the way through my hand. I tried to pull him out and I couldn't pull him out. I said, oh, damn, I was going to have to get somebody to come do that. Hurting, too. And I happened to think about, and I put my hand around the mast like that, you know, and got the other my hand there and sort of crimped it, and I got the other hand and snatched him out all the way through my hand.
Painful. Painful. And they make the sorest spot.
If they bleed, it's all right.
So you mashed it so it would bleed a lot?
Well, generally they'll cut a big enough hole. If they cut like stick like that, they'll cut a big enough hole that it'll bleed.
Did you go pour kerosene in it?
I probably did. I think I just let it bleed and went on to work. I had a lot of work to do. Clean all that mess up and go right pick back up again, you know.
Do you have any special remedies for nausea if you get seasick? You just endured?
I stayed seasick all my life. Sure did. Never did get to where I didn't get sick.
Nothing helped it.
I don't think the federal government's ever found anything for it.
You reckon they've studied that?
Hell yeah, the Navy has. My God. 8,000 to 10,000 troops came across there and all of them sick vomited.
Mm-hmm. Now they make pills that are
supposed to work. I know, I see them advertised. I don't know whether they'd worked or not.
Did they?
You ever been seasick? One of my sister-in-laws were carried her out one time. She was red-headed and freckle-faced, country gal. She got so blessed sick that she turned green. Every freckle on her was gone.
She paled.
She laid down up there. And we started going on somewhere else and started spraying over the bow. I told her, I said, Wilma, you want to move? You're going to have to move because I'm going to get you wet. It might help some. Go on. So she never did.
That's pretty good. Your wife didn't get seasick, but mm-hmm. you did. That's amazing that you'd stay in shrimping and be sick.
Some people never get sick.
Yeah.
I can't even go out in that swing and swing right now.
Without getting seasick.
It makes me
feel... That's amazing you'd keep up shrimping, though, and be sick like that. It's amazing you didn't find another occupation.
Well, I didn't know nothing else.
Well, it was something you wanted to do.
Yeah, I reckon so. I loved it. I got out fishing, you know. It's more of a pleasure. It wasn't like working on a a job for on a sawmill or something like that, you know, where you got to be there and go to work at 8 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock and get off at 5. And I shouldn't, if I got tired, I could quit and go drop the anchor and go to bed, see, or something like that. I got feeling bad today. I didn't lose my job. I reckon the fishermen ain't never had nothing. They have always been old-timers or independent bunch, but you can drive a bunch of goats better than you could drive a bunch of them old-time fishermen. Now, they'd work for nothing and for a living, you know, but they like to be satisfied. There were a lot of them come here from Boston and all them old-time Norwegians. Tell me about being out there. And at that time, they used oars and the dory and put trot lines out. Tell me about the hands freeze off, you know, and the legs, feet are freeze, the feet off and everything. Put slickers on, the slickers are just bust, you know, crack and bust. They lost a lot of many a man out of Boston off of them trollers. Because it got rough in the Atlantic out there.
You wear any special type clothing when you shrimped, Mr. Ross? Levi's?
Summertime, we never used a shirt. And I never did wear a hat. I did wear a hat when I was young, and my head itched all the time, and I reached up, pulled a handful of hairs out, and so I decided I'd leave that hat off, and I never did wear one. I could look for any time for them sun casters to start breaking out on me, but I know some of my friends, they do it. Mm-hmm. I had one under my eye there about 10 or 12 years ago. A doctor caught it in time and put cobalt on it. He said, it's going to be sore for 2 or 3 weeks. And I went on back and went to work. And one morning I woke up and I could stick my thumb in that hole where it looked like to me. I said, oh my God, it's done gone too far, you know. But heck, it healed right back up. They got it all.
Mm-hmm. So you just, would you go barefoot too? You didn't wear a shirt and you didn't wear a hat?
Most of the time we went barefooted, unless we was trying to cull where you dumped your, you know, culling shrimp. And you, heck, the first old captain I worked with, he went barefooted around in. He stayed barefoot all the time, had old long big toes. I bought him a pair of boots one time, it was getting them cold. And he come by and kicked the catfish and stuck it through the boot, stuck it in the end of his big toe and broke it off. He said, see, if I hadn't had that boot on, I wouldn't have done that.
They were hardy men back in those days, weren't they?
Yeah, my God.
So shrimpers, just even today, they don't wear slickers and things like that. But there's no special clothing that they wear. Did your wife have you do something special when you'd come home all dirty with after working on the boat with your clothes?
She was born to doing that, I reckon. So it was just a way of life.
Mm-hmm. But she wouldn't have you take them off in the backyard so she could wash them. Throw them in some water. You just came on in and took them off in the house, huh? Before, when you first started shrimping, they didn't have probably the navigational tools that they have today. How did you tell where you were when you'd go out?
Well, ordinarily, watching the land or something.
Landmarks?
Now, them snapper fishermen, them old-time snapper fishermen, they use a sounding lead to hunt bottom. 90% of the time was hunting a place, changing the bottom. I was on a boat one time 10 days out there, and from 5 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock at night, and we never caught a fish.
But you knew right where you were. Even when you were out there, you were in
You know some, they can set a course and come back home. Mm-hmm. You've seen a picture of a map of Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the break, the 50 fathom break, follows the coastline down just like land does. Well, they knowed if it was 20 foot deeper, they know they had to move over, you know. And back in this course, why, if you went south to deepen it up, and down off Tampa, you went west to deepen it up. And if you got deeper than what you wanted and you was hunting your place, why, you'd move back east a little bit. That's the way they navigated. They knowed.
Mm-hmm. So by sounding the depth.
Yeah.
That grouper type fisherman, even though he was not inside of land, knew.
No, he's 75, 80 miles offshore.
Mm-hmm.
Now they'd get messed up a while and be 5 or 10 miles off, but it didn't make no difference. I don't know. They was good, I reckon. They just
use a compass and a sounding rod to find their way. And, is that how you first started navigating, too, was using a compass?
Yeah.
When you'd go out of sight of land?
Well, the only time we ever used a compass shrimping was a fog shut down on us. And we tried to not let that catch us if we could, because we... Of course, I have worked in the fog and taken chances and... You'd watch the depth of the water, and you knowed about where you wanted to be to catch shrimp, you know, and I reckon you had a lot of instinct, too.
Mm-hmm.
Your instinct, you know, to tell you what you were doing wrong. A green man would get messed up, boy, he'd get messed up right now.
Did you ever take on anybody to teach them how to shrimp? Did you take on a crew that later would buy a boat themselves?
Oh, yeah.
Special person that would fish with you?
Yeah, that's the way they had learned. Why do you start with? You took a green man and you'd give him half a share for 2 or 3 weeks. And if he worked, well, then you paid him a share. If he didn't, well, you got rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
And... them that was good made it, and them that didn't want to, they didn't want to be there nohow. But that's the way they learned, is through actual experience.
So, by the time you stopped shrimping, you had more than one man on a crew, didn't you?
I wound up running that 50-foot boat by myself if my wife didn't go.
Really? You just never had more than...
than one man on the boat. Now, these snapper fishing, we had 7, mm-hmm. counting the captain.
Did you snapper fish with someone when you weren't...
I never went captain.
Mm-hmm.
Not much.
But you signed on as one of the crew?
Uh-huh.
What were the names... What did the captain call some of the... If he had 7 men... you signed on as a particular job. What were some of those names they called those 7 men on a snapper boat?
Well, on the snapper boat, you had an engineer and the mate and the cook, and the rest of them was deckhand.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to have the cook and the engineer and the mate. The mate iced all the fish and chopped the ice up. We carried blocks of ice in. You had to take a chisel and chisel every block up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the main part of the crew. Of course, they all fished too. You know, and they were all caught fish too. But if you got fish on deck or something, then that man, he'd take his... I seen the cook cooking like nobody business, fishing up a storm right on, you know. With his antenna, his line, and the other hand, and turning the stove on or something. They always had the stove on deck on them boat, where he could stand right there and tender his stuff and stir his beans about like that. And
you never lost anyone on board any of your ships
that
you... I guess my next question is, how do you know where to find shrimp? When you were shrimping, what were some of the methods that, you found worked for you?
Well, to try and that's the main thing. That little net, that troll, little troll.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any there, you'll catch them in it. But we watch seagulls and fish and muddy water and tide rifts. And I can't explain to you, but a lot of times you see a place that look right and turn around and it wouldn't be shrimp, it'd be fish or something, you know. In this bay here, these little shrimp, the speckled trout and them will find them, and they have an idea of catching them, and the shrimp will jump up, these local shrimp. The white shrimp will jump up. The brown shrimp will go to the bottom, so will the hopper.
They'll jump out of the water?
Yeah, they'll try to jump like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now the brown shrimp and the hopper, they'll go to the bottom and bury up in the bottom to get away from the fish. But the poor white shrimp, they can get under him and he'll just go scoot. And the birds will be catching them like nobody's business. They're just diving like everything, see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference in a white shrimp and a brown shrimp. The white shrimp will jump up when he sees you scared, and a brown shrimp and a hopper will go down.
What's a hobo?
That's a brown shrimp.
Just another name for the brown shrimp. Did you find night was the best time to catch shrimp, or day? Or did it matter?
Well, it depends on what you're catching.
Mm-hmm.
Now, white shrimp, if you ever mess with them at night, you mess them up. And that's one thing around it. The last 3 or 4 years, they ain't been able to have no luck shrimp. They start, somebody smarter than you, and he going out and catch some. A white shrimp goes to the bottom at night and seems like a lot of them shedding. Well, he's inactive. He just almost hibernates. And if you drag around in them then, boy, they gone. But now, a brown shrimp and a hopper, you almost have to catch them at night because the water's clear.
Mm-hmm.
And they bury up in daytime. Especially in any day deep water like off Tortugas. They could be, say, 1,000 pounds over 2 hours in a troll. In the daytime when the sun comes, you can't catch one. You can't find a shed or a sign of one or nothing.
Now that we've turned this tape over, I want to ask you about rock shrimp. When was the first time you ever saw rock shrimp?
Well, I've been seeing them ever since I started shrimping. They are native of the Gulf, I reckon.
But
I don't know anything about them.
Mm-hmm. So even back in the 20s and 30s, you saw rock shrimp?
Yes, ma'am.
But you didn't harvest those rock shrimp?
Nah.
No market for them?
The ones we always caught were small.
About the rock shrimp. Now you said even back in the 30s and 40s when you first began fishing, you saw rock shrimp.
Yeah, they've been here.
So what'd you do when you'd catch a lot of rock shrimp?
We never caught no lot of them.
Okay.
We never got right where they was at.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a place of his own he likes too, I reckon.
But now they catch quite an abundance of rock shrimp.
Yeah, but they're working them $250,000 boats and working off in 120, 150 feet of water too.
Mm-hmm. So that's where you find the rock shrimp,
mm-hmm.
farther off coast than mm-hmm. Apalachicola. So they're really not caught in the bay here now. They're
mm-hmm.
off the bay.
Once in a while, you'll see one that happened to come on in and.
You still go fishing?
Now,
do you ever go fishing with some of the younger men on the shrimp boats now, Mr. Ross?
I haven't been on a boat since I got sick and lost her.
Okay. Well, Mr. Ross, I want to thank you again for taking time to talk to us about shrimping.
Well, if there's anything in the world that you want to know about our local shrimp, I could tell you. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you have.
I know how they breed. I know how they what size they are when they get eggs in the back, and I know what makes them run. But now I don't know about the pepper sides. In 41, when the first World War I, I knew something was going wrong. I'd catch them dead all the time. Something was killing them. And I didn't dream what it was until I found out it was DDT. Later on, I found out it was DDT. Mm-hmm. Got reading that book, Silent Spring, that Rachel Carson put out, mm-hmm. and then I understood it.
You think the shrimpers are still plagued with that in the area?
Yeah, bad. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the deterioration of the shrimp here in the bay?
Well, they ain't doing no good, I'll guarantee you that, petricide or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that you probably want to go out and check
what Walker's
doing.
Yeah, I want to see what's going on.
I'm going to thank you again for letting me come and interview you today, and I'm going to call it quits right now.